sparkling comets swoosh and zigzag across a starry night sky and merge into a lion rampant. Golden letters, Lionsgate Films. Sections of blue and white circles rotate around an axis. White letters on a black background. 2929 Entertainment. A Wagner Cuban company. A Nick Hamm film. Greg Kinnear, Rebecca Raman Stamos, and Robert De Niro. A light blue cell floats on a navy background. The cell splits, multiplies, and merges into a pentagonal molecular frame which emits bright light, forming white letters. Godsend. The frames expand to octagons, disintegrate, and reform into vibrating packed crystals. Snow falls heavily on the top of raised umbrellas. On a busy city street, Paul Duncan, wearing a black woolly hat and heavy winter clothes, weaves his way through pedestrians. In one hand, he holds an umbrella high above his head. Under his other arm, he carries a rectangular box wrapped in red paper. Jessie, his pretty blonde wife, stands in their apartment surrounded by colorful balloons and children in party hats. She pours champagne into a glass and hands it to a guest. Trench coat pushes into the taxi. Paul rushes along the busy sidewalk, stops at a dark alley and jogs down it. Two black men step out of the shadows and thrust him against a wall. Paul drops the parcel and one man holds a knife to his throat.
Where's the wallet?
Maybe that cake. Where's Paul?
Jessie looks at her watch.
Maurice?
Shit, Mr. Duncan. You know this dude?
I'm raised in my ninth grade bio class, 5 years ago. I guess there's extra help sessions didn't quite do it for you.
Let's go, man. This guy's cool. He's the best teacher I ever had. Let's go! Sorry about this, Mr. Duncan.
The muggers walk down the alley.
Honest mistake.
Paul picks up the parcel and umbrella and runs down the alley. Jessie lights candles on a figure of eight birthday cake. Paul climbs the stairs into the hallway, places the present on the table, and takes off his gloves.
Got things under control?
Oh, God, what took you so long?
I ran into an old student. I got held up.
Mm-hmm. Did you get the present?
Yeah. Voila.
Gorgeous. Yeah. All right, let's do this.
Good. Yeah, Clara, get the lights.
Fine.
I know.
Ready? Everybody!
How you doing, Jake?
The lights are switched off.
Where is he? Where's my boy? Hey!
Dad!
Happy birthday to you!
How you doing?
Happy birthday to you! Happy birthday, dear Adam! Happy birthday to you!
He can't do it.
Adam with page boy hair blows out the candles after 5 attempts. Jessie kisses him.
Where is that exactly?
Oh, Mars.
Oh, that's hilarious. It's in the suburbs, a half hour away. It's a great offer, but Paul hasn't made up his mind yet. Yet that's a change from the school you teach at now.
Oh, yeah. Less crack, better cafeteria selections.
Don't mind Paul. He's still grappling with his conscience.
Mom! Dad! This is the coolest present ever!
Oh! That's good, too, right?
Think he needs more sugar?
Yeah, I know. Breaking every rule.
Hello?
Is Steggy in here?
Beware.
Hey. Cake for Steggy.
He can't eat that.
Why not?
He's an herbivore.
Oh. Oh, he's an herbivore. Okay, well, then I'll just take it back.
Wait, maybe leave it, just in case.
That's what I thought. Mwah.
Good Hi, birthday?
Dad. Yeah.
All right.
Good night, Dad.
Good night.
What was your favorite present?
My jacket.
Yay!
You got me.
You look so good in red.
Paul puts rubbish into a black bag.
What's on your agenda tomorrow?
I have to stop by the gallery. I have to pick up a lens I ordered. I have to get a new pair of sneakers for Adam. Ooh, I have to do you.
On the sofa, she pulls him on top of her.
I can't hear that right now.
Embracing each other, they kiss.
Have you thought about that job offer?
You do realize it'd mean moving, right?
He stands up, wine glass in hand.
So we'd move.
You know, we used to think we were pretty hip living down here.
I also used to think 4 Merit Lights and a Diet Coke constituted a meal. Honey, I love this place as much as you do. Well, we've got a kid to think about, and I just don't think any city's a great place to raise a kid these days. Plus, you'd be making twice what you're making now.
I'm just not sure the timing's right, and your photography's starting
to take... This is not about my photography.
Okay, I just can't shake this feeling that somehow I'd be selling out.
Right. Listen, you know how much I respect your ethics. This is about Adam. Sometimes ethics have to take a back seat.
Jesse and Adam walk across the city square.
Okay, your turn.
Okay, I'm going to a picnic.
Yeah?
And I'm going to bring an ant, a bagel, a croissant, a ding-dong.
Like you?
Aww. A ding-dong.
Yeah? Shoe store, 3:00.
Yes.
Take my hand.
Adam presses the tongue of a pair of red sneakers.
I think if you pump them anymore, they might explode.
Really?
He keeps pressing the tongue.
Kaboom!
Do you want them or not?
Yeah.
Do you want this?
He grabs a box with a blue basketball in it.
I'm just gonna go test these outside, okay?
Okay, but don't go too far.
Okay. And how would you like to pay for this?
A credit card, thanks.
Adam wears headphones over his woolly hat, steps into the street bouncing the ball. He wears his red baseball jacket with white sleeves. Directly outside the sports shop, construction barriers mark off roadworks. Jesse steps away from the checkout and looks at Adam through the window. They wave at each other.
Ma'am, I need your signature.
Sorry.
Jesse returns to the checkout. Adam bounces up and down on his new shoes. Adam drops the ball, which rolls into the construction area. He follows it and picks it up. 2 cyclists skid into the path of an oncoming car, which swerves and crashes through the barriers. The car hits a mound of earth and flies towards the open-mouthed Adam. Blackout.
Hello?
The red light flashes on Paul's answering machine.
You guys?
He climbs the hall stairs.
My greeting committee.
The room is dark.
Jess?
He walks towards the answering machine.
Sorry, I got stuck at a teacher's conference. Jesse?
He stands by the machine and presses the playback button with his forefinger.
You have 4 new messages.
Paul,
Paul drops the phone, leans against the wall, and slides to the floor. With hands clasped together, he leans forward and places his head against the breakfast bar counter. Thick snow covers the ground and the tops of the gravestones in the cemetery. Bare trees frame the steeple of a white stone church. Paul and a minister stand in the vestibule. Jesse leans against the door frame.
We'll handle all the funeral arrangements. God be with you.
Thank you for everything, Father.
Paul puts on his gloves, descends a step, and walks towards Jesse. Snow falls.
Honey.
Jesse turns and leans heavily on Paul. Richard Wells, a bearded, middle-aged man in heavy coat and trilby hat, approaches them as they descend the church steps.
Excuse me, Jesse Duncan?
Yeah?
It's Richard.
Richard Wells.
Richard?
Your wife was an undergraduate student of mine. It's been years.
Actually, Richard, it's kind of a bad time.
Yeah. I know. I read about it in the paper. I can't tell you how sorry I am.
Thank you.
Actually, do you have a minute? I'm sorry. I know this is a terrible
time. I don't think so. Not right now. But believe me, if there was any other way, the truth is, I went to some trouble to find you. I'd like to help you.
They turned to look at him.
Help us?
I'm a doctor. I specialize in fertility. If we could just talk, it won't take long. I promise you, we can go to a restaurant right over there.
I finished a residency in OBGYN, but my real passion was research. What is it you do, Paul?
I teach biology.
You do?
Can you just tell us what this is about, please?
The truth is, there's no easy way to present this to you, so I'm just going to come out and say it. My clinic has perfected a procedure by which a single cell could be used to create a genetically identical fetus. A fetus which could be carried to term and, in effect, be reborn.
Do you mean cloned?
Yes. This would be the identical boy down to the last chromosome on the last hair of his head.
This is how you want to help us?
I used to be affiliated with a hospital here, and I had a chance to review Jesse's records.
You did what?
I'm aware of the complications surrounding Adam's delivery. That it's impossible for you to conceive again.
You looked at her records.
I had to be certain that Jesse's condition didn't preclude carrying a child, and it doesn't. So, yes, I can help you. You can have him back. Your son, Adam, to birth again, to raise.
Adam's dead, goddammit.
Paul.
My son is dead.
Paul, please.
Come at me with this.
God knows what hell you've been through. The last thing I want to do is make this time any harder. But the truth is, I can do this, and I want you to know.
What you're talking about is illegal, not to mention potentially immoral.
Illegal, yes. Immoral, no. We're talking about using life to create life. That's all.
And you've done this before? You've successfully cloned a human being?
Oh, no, I haven't. But only because I've been looking for an ideal candidate. I read about what happened. And I hope that if you two aren't interested in what I'm proposing here, that I can
trust...
What
are you proposing here?
Well, honey, he's not even sure that he can.
Yeah, that's not true. I am sure. Still, it does come down to trust. Excuse me.
Your menus? A waiter hands the menus. Paul glowers at Wells.
You'd be gambling on me as much as I'd be gambling on you. My clinic is some 300 miles from here. If you were to do this, it would mean moving there, and I'll be honest with you, changing your lives entirely. Paul's right. This is extremely against the law. You'd have to sever all ties with family, with friends, with anyone who ever knew Adam. Of course, I would help with relocation, and I could get you a job at the local high school.
You know what? I've heard enough.
Paul, please. I know I'm setting
you up. No. You don't know. You could never know. Let's go.
You're right. I'm sorry to have upset you. Jesse.
Jesse?
I can be reached at this number. DNA can be saved indefinitely, but Adam's cells will only be viable another 72 hours, so if you do change your mind.
She takes his card. Paul drags her away. Their apartment.
Practically a stranger. I can't believe you're considering this.
I can't believe you're not considering this.
Any idea how much could go wrong?
Cold gray light shines through the window as Paul stands against the breakfast bar.
Honey, listen to me. Beyond words, okay. But only the tiniest thing has to go wrong, and so much has to go right.
What if it did?
It still wouldn't be Adam. It would be an identical twin. But it would be like another kid.
He'd have the same face and the same laugh.
Time, we can try again, I swear to God.
No, we can't. You know we can't.
We'll find a way. We can have another
I don't
child.
Want another child! I want Adam! I want him!
Paul hugs her tightly. Grief-stricken, her head rests on his shoulder. In Adam's room, Paul empties a crate of toys into a refuse sack and throws it aside angrily. He picks up a toy, drops it, and leans against the foot of the bed, head in his hands.
You know what I kept thinking while I was waiting for paramedics? He was in my arms, and I was watching him die. This is the last time I'll ever get to hold him.
She stands in the doorway, walks into the room, and lies down on the bed, which is cluttered with Adam's belongings. Some of the shelves are empty.
boy.
Paul stands up and strides out of the room. Grim-faced, he leans against the sports shop front. Yellow police tape with police line, "Do not cross," written on it, cordons off the accident site. Pedestrians walk along the sidewalk in both directions. Paul crosses to the tape and crouches by a tree. He places a bunch of white roses on the ground, stands up, and slowly walks away. In the apartment, Paul dumps a pile of newspapers on a table. He reads the front page of USA Today with a photo of a young Dr. Wells and the headline, "A Baby Doc with Bold Ideas." He types at his computer, and the screen reads, "The Godsend Institute."
Hello.
I just heard. I'm so sorry.
Oh, yeah, thank you, Sam.
How's Jessie taking all this?
Actually, she's not so well.
Right, of course. Look, would you please just pass on my condolences to her?
Yeah, I will. Hey, Sam, can I ask you something?
Have you ever heard of a doctor named Richard Wells?
Richard Wells? Well, sure I've heard of him. Why do you ask?
He was an old teacher of Jesse's.
Really? He's the stuff of legend. He was doing really advanced work on gene mapping. We're talking way ahead of his time. Anyway, last thing I heard, he sold his findings to a huge firm, made a ridiculous amount of money, and then just sort of dropped out of the game entirely. Every once in a while, I come across an article of his in a journal. Consistently brilliant. Like I said, he's...
a genius, yeah. I know.
Paul, I'm so very sorry.
Okay, thanks.
He looks at the image of the Godsend Institute on the screen. He watches a home video of Adam and Jesse playing together.
Where are you going?
No.
Three, two, one. The game is live.
All of a sudden,
I'm right side up.
Wait a second, you're confusing me. I don't want to say this time about it.
Do you think that's a good idea?
No, I think we should call it Adam. Guess who?
I don't know.
It's me, Adam.
I don't think I know an Adam.
I'm your son.
Ow!
The family jewels. Are we all in?
Damn, what a handsome group. Hi, Mom.
Adam.
Hello.
Sad, I've never seen you wear this before.
Paul pauses the video, hands the phone to Jesse. The sun shines as the Duncan's car speeds along a four-lane country road bordered by trees. In an operating theater, an assistant picks up an electronic scope from an instrument tray and hands it to Dr. Wells. He wears a white surgical hat, mask, and apron. He takes a long syringe and places it inside the scope. Jessie lies on the operating table, her legs wide apart, supported by stirrups.
All cells are in essence clones, identical copies of one original cell. Now, the key to artificially stimulating replication is in shocking a specialized cell back to its pre-specialized state, its stem cell precursor. The cell as it was before it became a liver cell or a brain cell or a relatively simpler cheek cell.
On a country road, the car passes a large house.
Once in this state, the cell's nucleus is immediately transferred to a mother's enucleated egg. The transfer completed, the egg cell will then ideally accept the donor nucleus as its own, at which point we let nature take its course.
Jesse waves at Paul, who watches from the gallery window of the operating theater. Removing his surgical gloves, Wells approaches Paul.
She did great. We just need to keep her here until tomorrow to make sure the implant takes. But she did wonderfully. She has to lie down for at least an hour, so why don't we go look at the house and I'll show you around. She's in good hands.
The clinic hallway.
So all these people and no one else knows.
The procedure doesn't differ much from a standard implant, so as far as my staff's concerned, Jesse's being treated as a high-risk in vitro, nothing more.
Dr. Wells?
Thanks, George.
Wells takes his hat, coat, and briefcase from George. Paul and Wells stride out through the clinic's glass sliding doors.
Riverton's a great town. I think you're really going to like it here. It's a bit secluded, maybe, but a wonderful community. Nice people, lots of families, perfect place to raise a child. So why don't you follow me? I'll show you around.
Wells pulls away from the doors of the Godsend Institute in his large, shiny black car. Paul follows him down the drive in his older convertible. The two cars turn from a road into the driveway of a very large house and expansive garden on the banks of a lake. Paul follows Wells down the hall's curving staircase.
Beautiful country, isn't it? This whole area has a lot of history, and the house itself is 100 years old at least. Sorry there's no furniture, so I took the liberty of ordering some. It should be here sometime tomorrow.
What if this doesn't work, Richard?
What if the implant doesn't take? The procedure's a bust. What then?
It'll work, Paul.
You can't say that with any certainty.
Look, no one can say anything with any certainty. I mean, even a routine pregnancy is fallible. But if I can speak plainly, what more do you have to lose?
Her. Jessie. She's pinned every hope in the world on this.
Wells nods and steps towards Paul.
And I won't let her down, or you. You have my word on that.
Outside the open doors of the Duncan's new house, two suitcases stand on the porch. Paul strides across the hallway of a large room in the middle of which Jessie stands, surrounded by boxes.
This is for real?
For now.
They move to the bottom of the stairwell and look up at the staircase spiraling above them.
I can't believe this place.
Jessie pauses at the entrance to the spacious kitchen and enters slowly. Paul stands against a white door, smiling. She walks past him, takes his hand, and releases it.
Hey.
He opens the white door.
Look at this.
Jessie goes through the door, switches on the light, descends a couple of stairs, and peers into the basement.
Oh my God, Paul! You know what we could put down here?
Dark room?
She climbs the stairs and kisses Paul.
How you feeling?
I'm okay.
Paul opens the front door into the hallway. He puts his briefcase on the floor.
Home? You are. Big home! Hey!
Paul walks into the hall and pauses at the sitting room door. A fire burns brightly in the fireplace. Photos of Adam cover a table. Jessie sits on the floor.
Hi.
He walks around the table and stares at the photos. Jessie, wearing maternity dungarees, is heavily pregnant and surrounded by more photos on the floor. Paul crouches down beside her.
You said we'd never have a party in here.
Oh.
The operating theater.
Jessie,
you're
fully dilated, the head's already crowning,
yes,
you just need to now push.
Nothing's wrong!
Nothing's wrong!
Nothing's wrong!
Look, coming out, it's fine, you can see the head. Just push, keep pushing. Keep pushing. Push, push. Come on, push, push, push,
push.
Come on. Oh, come on. There we go, okay. All right.
We're out. We're out.
That's it. Let me just hear you. Let me just hear you scream. Come on. Come on.
Exhausted, Jessie's head drops back on her pillow.
It's great. It's all right. It's great.
Just need some breath from him.
He's all right.
Okay, how long?
30 seconds. 31, 32, 33, 34, 35, 36,
gonna have to bag him.
37, 38.
What's wrong?
39, 40 seconds. 31, 32, 43, 44.
Wells lifts the baby, still with blood on his head, and hands him to Jessie.
Oh, baby. Oh, baby. Oh. It was the same as last time, remember? It's him. You wanted to give us a scare, didn't you?
At night in the Duncan's nursery, Jesse lays the baby in a crib.
Here you go, kiddo.
Paul places a blanket over the child.
Good night, Adam.
Paul tucks him in, and Jesse bends over to kiss the baby.
My little boy.
I still think it's a little strange.
It's his name. It's always been his name, Adam.
They walk hand in hand out of the nursery. Blackout. A figure of eight chocolate birthday cake with candles. Adam, with short hair, blows out the candles energetically.
There you go, buddy. Uncle Richard!
Happy birthday, Adam.
Wells, present in hand, embraces Adam.
So how's work going?
It's good. It's good. Nice kids. Bright, too. I don't know. Sometimes I feel like I'm teaching fish to swim at a Club Med.
You don't still miss your old school?
No, no. It's more like I miss missing it.
Uncle Richard, want to help me fly it?
A red kite.
Let's get it up there. Keep it away from the trees. So what was this word you said?
Reservoir. It's a science word, Uncle Richard. We've been learning about natural resources in school.
Oh, you mean a reservoir. Well, that's a lot like a lake, only it's a man-made lake.
But I thought God made everything.
Well, in a way he did, if you believe he created those people who figured out how to make a reservoir, right?
Paul stands on the porch, watching Wells and Adam.
Hey! Get out! Would you come on inside? Say goodbye to your friends!
Thank you, Adam!
Adam and Wells look at each other and don't move.
Bye.
Grim-faced, Paul watches Wells and Adam play with a kite. He turns into the house. He puts rubbish in a bag.
Hey!
Paul picks up a toy on the stairs.
Birthday boy! How many times I gotta tell you? Can't leave your toys around. Somebody's gonna trip.
Adam sits on his bed, wearing red pajamas and a red football helmet.
For those of us who don't wear helmets in the house.
Adam grins broadly inside the helmet. Paul walks towards the bed.
What you doing?
Frowning, Paul picks up a toy stegosaurus, which sits on the bed beside Adam.
Where did you get this?
It was a birthday present from Joyce Moore. Do you like it?
Yeah.
He puts the toy back on the bed.
Why don't you get some sleep?
He touches the helmet.
Dad, I've been thinking.
About what?
I don't think I like you so much anymore.
Adam takes off the helmet. Paul, walking out of the room, stops and turns. He stares at Adam, who glares at him. Adam breaks into a smile.
Gotcha.
Oh, somebody is in some very serious trouble. Where do you think you're going? Where do you think you're going? I gotta smother you.
Jesse applies lotion to her legs.
It's just in some ways, he's so much the same, you know?
Paul walks in from the bathroom.
But he's still his own person, entirely. And then, look at him. I honestly forget sometimes, you know? And then something like that toy dinosaur thing will happen.
It's okay, it happens to me too.
I just worry, you know?
What?
If you ever found out.
I won't find out.
What if he did? What it would mean to him. I just love him so much. Both of you.
He stares at her, lustfully. She wears a white vest and pants. She sits on his lap and they embrace. In Adam's room, he lies asleep in bed, holding a teddy. He rolls over. In Paul and Jesse's bedroom, they kiss passionately. He grabs her vest, she lifts her arms, and he pulls it over her head. They kiss again. In his bed, Adam's arms flop to the side and the bear falls to the floor. Jesse helps Paul remove his shirt and they lie back on the bed. Adam turns his head restlessly. Adam dreams of moving rapidly down a long school corridor with glass doors at the end. Standing in the corridor wearing a hooded sweatshirt, Adam turns around rapidly. In bed, he opens his eyes. He sees himself looking along the corridor apprehensively. Paul and Jesse kiss in bed. They roll over and he lies on top of her. Adam walks along a landing towards a moonlit window. Dead Adam, in his red and white birthday jacket, appears behind a window.
No!
Children trapped behind a door with smoke in the air.
No! Help!
Adam!
Paul runs up the stairs.
It's okay. I'm right here.
Paul rushes upstairs as Adam watches dead Adam yell through a window.
Mom!
Adam?
Adam stares out the window.
Oh my God. Adam!
Paul walks towards him. In flashes, glimpses dead Adam with pallid face and hollow eyes, retreats into the darkness, then breaks the window with raised hands.
Ah! Oh.
Take
away.
It easy! It's okay! No.
Okay, it's okay.
Stay away!
Take it easy!
Get away!
Jesse!
Get away from
it's okay.
Me.
Both Adams turn, a girl at a smoky window.
Okay, all right!
No,
it's okay.
Get out of me!
Jesse!
Honey!
Oh, God!
Adam?
What happened?
I don't know, he just collapsed! Call 911!
I'm calling Richard!
Paul struggles to his feet, carrying Adam's limp body. In a large white room in the clinic, Adam lies unconscious on an elevated bed. Paul and Jesse watch him anxiously through a window at the far end of the room. Staff climb the stairs behind them. Wells approaches the couple.
Richard, thank God. I want him in a hospital.
Well, my staff and I can handle
this. Well, your staff don't even know about this.
And they don't need to. It's the same as always. We're close friends. You know our arrangement.
Okay, maybe we need to reconsider our arrangement. It's 5 hours. He's still unconscious.
His respirations and color are good, and he's responding to low-level stimuli. He's basically just sleeping.
Except for some reason, he's not waking
up. Listen, what you describe sounds a lot like night terrors.
Night terrors?
It's a sleep disorder. A child screams in his sleep. He may sit up, walk, even talk, but all attempts to wake him are futile.
No. You weren't there. This is something entirely different.
All right. Hold on a minute. I know it's scary, but we talked about this. The possibility that things could change once Adam crossed the age at which he died. Well, it's been 8 years. As of now, he's crossed it.
You said things could change. You never said anything like this.
Because I couldn't have known. Look, he is the only one, period. We are and always have been at the mercy of that fact. Up to this point, we've had a map, Adam's first 8 years. But now we're entering uncharted territory. We have no way of knowing who the Adam of age 9, age 10, age 50 is going to be. What problems he may or may not have. I promise you, there's nothing more a hospital would be doing for him.
What's happening here, Richard?
That's what I'd like to find out. My feeling is it's probably nothing. Let's just give it a little time, okay?
Yeah.
Paul nods. Wells glances at Jesse, who looks through the window at Adam. Paul and Jesse sit holding each other on the clinic stairs.
The last 8 years, no matter how happy I've been, I've always had this feeling that somehow we wouldn't get away with this. Not that someone would find out, just that somehow we'd lose him again.
Adam's bed is tilted downwards. He is wired to various monitors above his head. A nurse passes by the window. His head wobbles slightly as his eyes move rapidly under his lids. He dreams of two Adams in hooded sweatshirts. A classroom door opens and Adam with the red jacket stands in the corner by the blackboard. He lights matches and throws them into a waste paper basket. On the other side of the room, a child's drawing of a burning building is on a display board. Pupils sit at the desks. A dark-haired girl in pigtails stares. Her hand and face press against a frosted glass door with red flames behind her. Adam's eyes open. Paul and Jesse doze on a waiting room couch. Wells and Adam sneak up behind them.
Adam!
But no. Is he all right?
He's fine.
Are you okay? I feel hungry.
Mommy.
Come on, kiddo.
Everything's okay.
Fantastic. Come on.
Richard, thank you.
I'll see you all tomorrow.
Paul lifts up Adam, and Jesse hugs Wells. The top floor windows of the Duncan's house. In Adam's room, the drawing of the burning building lies on a table. He runs his fingers along a radiator, looks out the window, and places his hand on the window pane.
Adam! Dinner's on!
Paul opens Adam's door.
Jesse! He's not up here.
Paul walks across the floor and looks out the window. He notices the drawing on the table, picks it up, and examines it. Glancing out of the window, he sees Adam walking in the garden. Paul raps on the pane. Adam glowers at him and walks away. Paul turns from the window.
Adam!
Adam walks quickly down the drive. Paul follows.
Hey. Come on! Adam!
Adam starts running down the drive and onto the road. He crosses to the other side.
Hey!
Paul runs out of the drive onto the road. He stops and stares at Adam. His son glances back at him, then runs into a wood. In cold gray light, Paul pursues him, weaving his way through the trees.
Adam!
Paul stops, looks around, and walks forward. Adam sprints across the leaf-strewn ground, ducking and twisting his way through branches. His father scrambles after him and stops opposite an old abandoned wooden building. Parts of the wall are missing, and the door is gnarled and moldy. He walks towards the entrance.
Adam!
He climbs the steps, pushing open the door, and peers into the gloomy darkness.
Adam!
Sacks are piled on the floor. Chains and ropes hang from the ceiling. Gray light shines through a window onto Adam.
There you are. What are you doing here? Didn't you hear me calling you? Hey.
He crouches in front of Adam.
You all right? Talking.
With eyes fixed on the window, Adam points towards the light and stands.
Adam. Hey, I'm talking to you.
Hey! Answer me.
Yes, Daddy?
Did you hear me calling you?
Adam shakes his head.
Your dinner's ready. Go in the house.
Adam nods and moves to the door. Paul, on his knees, puts his hands to his forehead, then lowers them. He stands up, looks around apprehensively, and leaves. A wooden pulley, an axe, and heavy chains hang from the ceiling. Inside Dr. Wells' office, he sits reading at his large desk and twists meditation balls in his hand. A reading lamp illuminates his face, and behind him, framing a window, are plush red drapes. He takes off his glasses and picks up a phone, which sits beside a computer screen.
Well, Paul just said it was kind of a strange moment. No, he seems fine. Yeah, that's what I'm hoping. It's probably nothing.
I don't think it's anything to worry about. Okay? All right, take care, and I'll see you soon.
All right, well, thanks, Richard. Take care.
I think we should take him to a specialist.
Paul rises from his desk.
Richard doesn't think it's anything to worry about.
His word's gospel?
He walks into the hall to join her.
How long are we supposed to live like this? When's all this gratitude end?
Irritated, Jesse walks away. Paul leans against the doorframe, raises his eyes upwards, and turns back into the study. Wells, at his office desk, rolls the meditation balls in his hands. Adam squirms in his bed. He dreams of the long school corridor with glass doors swinging at the end. A classroom door bursts open and Adam awakens, terrified. At his school, children in cars arrive in the driveway. Jesse sits against the car. Adam stands in front of her, wearing woolly hat, anorak, and rucksack.
Sure you're okay?
Yeah. Sure?
Yeah.
Bye.
Adam turns, climbs the steps, and enters the school. He walks slowly along a corridor as children open and close classroom doors. Drawings on display boards line the walls, and Adam passes a glass cabinet with papier-mâché animals inside. He reaches a closed classroom door. Paul stands in front of a class, holding a wire model of DNA.
Anybody know what this is? It's a big, ugly visual aid. Let's do it like this. If you think of DNA as a fuse box, each of the genes are either switched on or off, depending on which cell we're talking about. So that the genes responsible for, say, the length of Kevin's nose hair wouldn't be much use in his pinky toe.
So what, the gene isn't present?
No, it's present. It's just inactive. It's turned off. It's dead.
He puts papers in his briefcase and lifts his jacket.
You know what? Why don't you just take a look at chapter 11, the rest of the period, and then, go.
The school playground.
I'm gonna put on a little show for you guys, and you're gonna pay me your lunch money for payment. And if you don't, I'll beat the crap out of you for the rest of your life.
How about this? No.
How about...
Yes!
What are you gonna do about it, huh? I'm little.
Adam stares at Roy, a large boy in a yellow jacket. At the clinic.
What if his having outlived the life of that first original cell has somehow allowed some dormant problem to be switched on?
Listen, maybe it's significant, maybe it isn't, but the fact remains that any changes in health or behavior could have occurred naturally the last time as well. These night terrors,
if that's what they are.
Paul, it's a common sleep disorder.
If there's anything he is, and it's common.
What do you want me to say, Paul, that there's something seriously wrong with him? You don't think that I'm just as concerned?
No, I don't.
You have every right to worry, but for 8 years we've known what to expect. Most parents never have the benefit of hindsight. From now on, neither do we.
We?
You know what I mean. Can I get back to my patients, please?
Paul nods. Wells turns away.
Ever want to have any children of your own, Richard? Jesse's always saying how great you are at that. It seems like such a shame.
Paul, he's your son. Believe me, I know what he means to you. But maybe you can keep in mind what he does mean to me.
Paul nods and turns down a corridor. Wells watches him through the windows and turns away. Jesse and Adam at the school entrance.
Here they come.
Oh. Hey there, there you are. What's the glum, chum?
There's this new kid, Roy Hazen. He's always showing off, like how high he goes on the swings and stuff. He's a total asshole.
Hey, where'd you learn that language?
I don't know.
I don't like it. Get in the car.
Adam walks to the car. Jesse follows. Paul drives along a road and looks out of his driver's window at trees and detached houses. At his driveway, Adam cycles out in front of the car. Paul swerves, narrowly misses him, and Adam falls over.
Oh, God!
Adam? Are you all right?
Are you all right?
Adam!
I didn't see you. I swear to God, I didn't see you. I came so close to hitting you. Do you know that?
Adam.
Do you know you could have been killed just now? Do you?
How many goddamn times do I gotta tell you to keep your bicycle out of the street?
Paul!
What's the matter with you?
Jesse pulls Adam away from Paul, who wipes his forehead with his hand. Looking accusingly at Paul over her shoulder, she takes Adam up the drive. Guilt-ridden, Paul picks up the bicycle. An angle-poised lamp illuminates Paul as he sits at his desk typing at his computer. He looks at a web page on sleeping disorders. Adam lies in bed, his head rolling from side to side. Paul moves the cursor and clicks on title, Incoherent Sleep and Wake Cycles. The monitor reads, Case Study. Sleep psychosis in young children. The Duncan's back porch with cold daylight on the lake beyond. In Paul and Jesse's bedroom, Paul opens the curtains as Jesse walks across the floor in her dressing gown.
Hello?
The bathroom. Adam emerges from under the bathwater, shaking himself off and wiping his eyes. He plays with a stegosaurus and a model man, making them fight. He puts them down and looks apprehensively through the plastic shower curtain. Adam's hand slowly draws back the curtain, and he peers towards the closed bathroom door. He sits back down behind the curtain and plays with the yellow toy boat and the other toys. Paul on the phone.
Yeah, I would, actually. Let me get a pen.
Dr. Lieber? Okay, in Beaufort?
Great. Sam, I appreciate this. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Who's that?
Wrong number.
Adam makes the Stegosaurus attack the boat. A shadow passes in front of the curtain. He pulls the shower curtain back and looks at the bathroom door. He lets go of the curtain and slowly stands up. He peers around the edge of the curtain and scans the whole room. Light comes through a skylight. A lamp stands in one corner. A large print hangs on the wall. A table lamp shines in another corner with a smaller print on the wall. Adam steps out of the bath onto the gray tiled floor. His feet drip as he takes a few steps to pick up his plaid dressing gown. He puts it on. A large mirror reflects his movements. He pads across the floor cautiously. Paul descends the hall stairs. He stops and looks toward the bathroom door. Adam walks away from the bath. Adam, eyes wide in terror, stares at the curtain, which moves and crinkles. Paul approaches the bathroom door. The curtain trembles and pulses. Paul stands outside the door and tries the door handle. Adam watches the curtain rings pop one by one as the curtain is pulled off its rail.
Adam?
Adam walks towards the bath.
Adam, open the door. Open the door, son. Open the door! Adam? Open the door. God damn it! Open the door, son!
A face rises up from under the curtain. Adam runs to the door. A gnarled hand grabs his arm.
What? Why is the door locked?
Help.
What? What?
The curtain, he was under there.
No. Look. What are you talking about? Look. It's
no,
fine.
No. Don't let him hurt.
Shh. There's nobody gonna hurt you. Look. It's okay. It's okay. Shh. Calm down. It's all right. I think you just had a bad dream.
No.
Huh?
I saw it.
What? What did you see? Adam, talk to me. Please, you gotta talk to me. I can't help you if I don't know what this is.
I know something.
Okay. What? What is it?
Something bad is going to happen.
No, it's not. I'll never let anything bad ever happen to you.
Not to me.
Listen to me, you're my son. You understand that? Huh? Say it.
I'm your son.
That's right. We're gonna be okay.
Paul holds Adam tightly. The clinic. Jesse approaches Wells.
So, how many eggs did you retrieve?
I only retrieved three. I thought that would be enough. I didn't want to take any chances.
Hi. Sorry if it's a bad time.
No, it's fine. Excuse us. What's the matter? You look.
I need to speak to you about something.
I have to stop off at home for some papers. Why don't I fix us some lunch?
The school playground. Adam and other boys watch Roy on the swing. He jumps off and approaches Adam.
Hey, how would you like that?
Roy punches Adam on the arm.
Hey, I just got an idea.
How about we have a swinging contest?
Yeah.
You guys will be the judges.
Yes. Make it very fair.
Yeah.
Ladies first.
Roy gestures to Adam, who sits on a swing and pushes off.
Don't go too high. You'll start crying. Oh, don't break a nail. Oh, no.
Come on, you chicken.
Oh, oh nasty monkey.
Oh, Adam, can you stop me? What? No spinning. Come on, come down from there. Come down right now. No, hey.
Adam lands awkwardly.
Adam?
The teacher holds him. Adam spits in her face. Wells kitchen.
So you're saying these nightmares might have started at this age anyway?
Or possibly triggered by any number of things.
They drink white wine.
School, stress, tension at home.
Yeah, well, Paul's convinced that somehow Adam's cells have...
retained memories of his first life. There's an often cited experiment. A rat was trained to run a maze, killed, then ground up and fed to a second rat. The second rat, when presented with the same maze, completed it in record time, proving that memory lived on in those ingested cells. It's fascinating, really. Also a bunch of nonsense, an urban legend.
So it's not possible he's remembering?
No. No.
Thank God.
Wells moves to the cooker.
Frankly, I'm more concerned about Paul's working up these strange theories.
Paul's just having a tough time right now.
Wells tastes the sauce with a wooden spoon. He holds it out to Jesse to taste.
It's good.
He's never felt as comfortable here as you, has he?
No.
He returns the spoon to the saucepan.
You don't think he'd ever try to leave, do you? Jesse, that can't happen. Out here in the middle of nowhere, it's easy to forget the consequences of what we've done. But if anyone ever found out, you might never see Adam again.
I know.
I can trust you to rein Paul in?
Yes.
In the school office, Paul stands sullenly at a counter.
Sorry, I just got the message.
They called me at the high school. Apparently they couldn't reach you.
I was out. How's Adam?
He's fine, Mrs. Duncan. I have him waiting in my office right now.
I don't know exactly how to say this, but his behavior has distanced some of the other children. And the thing is, he could have seriously injured himself.
Yeah. Let's go in and see him, okay?
Is that wine in your breath?
I was having lunch.
With who?
Adam watches his parents through blinds. In the car.
Why are you so upset? It was just lunch. I just wanted to talk to him about Adam. God, Paul? Wait, where are we going?
For a second opinion.
She picks up a note stuck to the dashboard and reads it.
Are you kidding me?
Am I smiling?
Letters on a frosted glass door. Dr. Lieber.
Now, about these night terrors.
And you're confident that's what this is?
I see it in a number of kids Adam's age. It scares the bejesus out of the parents, but the kids outgrow it. As for Adam's recent changes in behavior, well, he's poorly rested. He's understandably...
No, you don't know him. This is something else.
In the corridor outside, Adam spies through the letterbox. In Lieber's office...
He won't leave me alone.
Who?
Zachary.
Zachary?
Mr. Duncan, who is Zachary? Is he a boy in this class?
I don't know. Honey, who's Zachary?
He's the boy who lives in my dreams.
The Duncans walk down the corridor outside the office.
So talk to me, pal. This boy told you his name was Zachary?
Not really. I kind of just know.
And you've never seen his face?
He doesn't like to show it, but I know because of his jacket.
What kind of jacket?
Okay, you know.
Just let him answer.
It's red with white sleeves.
The Duncan's car travels along a slushy road. Adam is awake in the back seat.
Where are we going? Where are we going?
Where's who going, Adam? Adam?
Zachary.
Zachary. And where are you?
Where we live.
I don't want to do this. This is crazy.
According to who, Richard? Listen, there's something he's not telling us, Jesse. I know it. The way he's handling this, the way he's staying so close to us.
He cares about
Adam.
Us.
Zachary.
Oh, okay.
Zachary, where are you?
Adam's red sneakers.
Tell me about Zachary.
He's never even known a Zachary.
A hand carries a hammer, light on the back of a woman's head.
What are you trying to tell us, Adam? Say it! Say it!
That's enough. Stop
it. Tell us what you're trying to say.
Stop it.
What if you don't understand it? How do you expect to beat it?
I don't want to understand
it. You're dead!
Paul, watch out!
A boy's arm in a red jacket with white sleeves brings the hammer down on a screaming woman's face. Paul's car swerves out of the way of an oncoming truck. The car spins and halts.
You okay? Honey? You okay?
Is he all right? Is he all right?
He's okay. You're all right. You're okay.
Jesse glowers at Paul.
Did I die?
In his bed, Adam holds Paul's hand. Distressed, Jesse stands up from the edge of the bed.
Of course not. You've been right here with us. Go to sleep.
Paul leaves the room as Adam snuggles down under the covers. Paul stands beside Jesse, who sits on the hall stairs.
Oh my God, that's what this
Shh.
Is.
He's remembering his first life. Boy in the city? Jesus, it's possible. If certain genes from the cell used in the procedure managed to retain certain memories.
He's not remembering.
How can you say that?
Because he can't.
They look at each other, and Jesse descends the stairs. Adam dreams of moving past the trees outside the abandoned wooden building. Wearing a hooded sweatshirt, he enters. He walks past a cage with sacks piled inside it. A saw and ropes lie on the table. More sacks and a large pile of rope lie strewn around the gloomy room. Adam walks around the edge of the cage and lifts his hand to pull a chain hanging from the ceiling. He turns and sees the white sleeve of an arm holding an axe. It smashes into his face.
Honey, wake up, we're at school.
In the classroom, Adam sits at his desk, drawing the picture of the burning building.
Okay, now I want to see everyone in your family outside your houses in the pictures, okay?
Take your time.
Lots of colors. And don't forget to write your name on it. Nice and big. I want to put these up around the classroom.
Beautiful. You can put pets in your picture.
He signs it Zachary.
Have some fun.
Reflected in a plate glass window, Jesse approaches a shop, stops and looks in. A large black and white photograph of children in a swimming pool sits on an easel with Jessie's name in big black letters underneath it. She goes in.
Hi, Pat.
Hi, Jessie.
Hi. I just thought I'd stop by to see how the stuff's
Come
doing.
In. Very well. Richard Wells was in yesterday. He bought this big one and these three small ones on the spot.
That's great. Excuse me a second. Hello?
Hi.
Richard.
Just thought I'd see how Adam's doing.
Not so well, actually.
He had another night terror
last night. Paul even managed to get him talking this time.
I'm wondering if we can use his ability to vocalize in that state to our advantage.
I don't know. What would that entail?
Well, for starters, I'd like you to bring him in again.
I'm not
sure Paul would be comfortable with that.
But I thought we agreed you were going to try to rein him in.
I know we did, but I'll talk to him, okay?
Please do.
I need to go.
Outside the school, Roy and his gang cycle away from the building. Adam follows but stops and stares after them. Wells stands in his office holding his meditation balls. He crosses the floor to a grand piano and rolls a ball on the strings under the lid. Roy approaches a river's edge. The gang watches. Adam cycles along the road above the steep riverbank. He stops and parks his bike by a crash barrier. The gang's bikes lean against the crash barrier on the other side of the road.
Come on! Come on! Come on, I'm joining you, Ken! What are you, babies? Oh, you want your papa? Let's go!
Wells clacks the meditation balls together as he paces the floor in his office. In his car, Paul approaches the bridge and crash barriers above the riverbank. He stops when he spots Adam's bike by the roadside. He climbs out of the car and closes the door. As he looks at Adam's bike, he walks to the crash barrier and leans his hands on it, gazing down at the riverbank and river below. Wells looks at his meditation balls. A boy's feet walk through fallen leaves and step over a log. Roy kneels by the water's edge. He turns around and looks at the empty wood with light mist drifting through the trees. He turns back to the river. The riverbank has a light coating of snow and the water flows quickly. Roy looks over his shoulder.
Who's there?
The wood is deserted. He turns back to the riverbank and pokes and scrapes at the water with a branch. He turns and, eyes wide with terror, sees a heavy branch flying towards his face. Wells drops the meditation balls on his wooden floor. A photograph of Adam, with a hole punched through it, hangs limply off Jesse's darkroom wall. Through the open door of the darkroom, Jesse bends down in the hall to pick up a photograph. She carries wrapped frames in her hands. She steps into the darkroom, switches on the light, and sits on a step. Her photographs and equipment are strewn all over the room. She drops the frames. Impaled on a gas valve, a photo of Adam with his face cut out. She pulls it off, looks at it, and puts her hand to her mouth. She gazes at the vandalized room. Trembling, she touches a large, slashed photo of Adam playing in the street, then examines scattered negatives on a light screen. One negative has Adam's eyes and mouth cut out. She turns and moves to a cupboard, scatters objects from the top of it, and lifts down a red box. Clutching it to her chest, she sits at the light screen. She wipes her nose, opens the lid, and clutches the photos of the first Adam. Paul drops his keys on the hall table.
Jesse!
She closes the lid and puts the box back on top of the cupboard.
You down there?
He moves towards the dark room. Adam stands framed in the kitchen doorway. Jesse rushes out of the dark room and shuts the door behind her.
Did you hear me?
Huh?
You okay?
She kisses him.
Are you hungry?
Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad.
Yeah. Oh, you hungry?
Paul carries Adam upstairs. At the dining table, Adam eats and Paul sits pensively.
Hello? No, I'm sorry, Tanya, he isn't. Tanya, slow down. Hold on, I'll ask him right now, hold on.
She walks around the dining room table and crouches down beside Adam.
Adam, Roy's mother says he hasn't come home from school yet. Do you know where he might be?
No.
Wait. What were you doing down at the river this afternoon?
Just playing.
Adam continues to eat.
With who?
I'm not supposed to say.
Adam, can you answer me?
He nibbles his food. Paul glances at Jesse.
Go to your room.
Adam stares at Paul.
Now!
Adam stands and leaves. Jesse sits on Adam's chair, phone clutched to her chest. She raises the phone to her ear.
I'm sorry, Tanya, he doesn't know.
Paul puckers his lips and nods.
Yeah, good luck.
You said Richard mentioned using his ability to vocalize to find out more. Call him. Bring Adam in tomorrow.
In the clinic, Paul, Jesse, and Wells stand around Adam's examination couch.
Adam, what's the name of the school? Can you tell me the name of the school?
Shh. A carved stone sign, St. Pius.
Oh, not gonna be St. Pius?
Are you sure this can't hurt him?
It's a mild tranquilizer. We're just poking around to see what we dig up. All right, Paul?
Jesse looks at Paul.
Yeah.
Adam lies with his eyes open, wires attached to his chest.
Adam, is Zachary in there? In school?
A boy in the red jacket stands in the school corridor. He disappears. Five children stride along the corridor. In Adam's hallucination, Zachary, identical in likeness to him, turns around in the corridor and sees in double vision each of the five pupils.
They all are.
Are you sure you want to do this?
Wells glowers at Paul. The drawing of the burning building.
Clark.
We know this name, Zachary Clark?
Who is Zachary Clark?
Zachary sets fire to a waste basket. Girls in the class point and scream at him.
Are you him? Are you Zachary?
Adam walks out of the classroom and sees his double running down the corridor.
Who are you? They think I'm him! They think I'm him! They think I'm him! They think I'm him! No!
Adam!
God.
Adam,
Richard, please stop.
Adam!
God. It's hurting him.
Adam, wake up!
God.
Wake up, Adam! God damn it, do something. Adam! Adam?
Zachary.
Adam wakes up.
Honey?
Adam looks from Wells to Paul.
Daddy?
Paul nods, and his eyes flicker towards Wells.
You're okay. You're okay.
Jesse glances at both men. Wells opens the door into the clinic hall. Paul follows him.
Hey, why'd you call him Zachary? Answer me. Richard.
Because he wasn't responding to his own name.
That's bullshit. I want the truth. You set me up.
Okay, it's okay. You needed my okay to push him, but you wanted him pushed. Why?
Paul, you've gone completely...
Stop telling me what's wrong with me and tell me what's wrong with my goddamn son!
An assistant watches Paul and Wells closely. Paul turns away from Wells.
Paul, I wish I could help you. Adam's changing. He's getting worse. Sometimes it's like there's two of them. He's destructive. He's tried to harm himself. The other kids were scared of him, Richard. There's something you're not telling us.
There have been times I've seen you talking to him and he's in that same blank state, but he listens to you, doesn't he?
Huh? Don't push me, Richard. Adam's all I care about in the whole world. I'll go public if I don't get some answers, son. You understand that? You understand I'll go public?
Wells walks away.
Not kidding.
I swear to God, I'll tell the whole goddamn world what you've done.
Wells stops, turns, and walks back to Paul.
What we've done, Paul. What we've done.
They glare at each other. Then Wells turns and walks away. Adam is asleep in the back of the car. Jesse, in the passenger seat, looks over her shoulder at him, then looks out the window.
Zachary Clark or the school. Look, I have tomorrow off. It's a few hours driving to the city. I'm gonna look into it.
No, Paul, absolutely not. If Richard found
him... He won't. I'll leave in the morning. I won't be back until afternoon. Hold on.
A police car and ambulance at the crash barrier and bridge. An officer flags down the car. Paul and Jesse watch from the bridge as ambulance men retrieve Roy's body from the river. On the riverbank, Roy's mother is restrained by a police officer. Jesse puts her hand over her mouth as Paul turns and looks at Adam sitting impassively in the back of the car. Jesse pours Adam a drink in their kitchen as Paul takes off his coat and walks past them.
Jesse, can I see you now?
They walk into the hall and close the kitchen door.
Told you.
What?
You're the one who said he never got along with them.
The twins said they saw Roy playing down by the water, that he'd been showing off. They're all but sure he fell in. You're not?
I'm not sure of anything right now.
In the living room, Paul looks out the window and Jesse sits.
No matter what he does, he's still our son.
You find that comforting right now? Huh?
What are you saying? You wish we'd never done this?
He looks away, lowers his eyes, and shakes his head. Adam's bedroom.
Baby. Mommy loves you.
She moves away. Adam lies on his back, his hands neatly crossed on top of the bed covers. His eyes move rapidly from side to side under his eyelids. In the cold gray light of dawn, a boat dock juts out into the lake by the Duncan's house. In their bedroom, Paul drops a note onto his pillow as Jesse lies asleep in bed. He gently strokes her arm, puts on his jacket, and strides out of the bedroom. In the driveway, Paul walks to his car, opens the door, and climbs in. The car pulls away. With pallid face and rigid stance, Adam stands staring through the arch window and open shutters of his second floor bedroom. In Jessie's room, she lies asleep, her eyes slowly open. Jesse bolts upright. Adam stands by the bedside, staring at his mother.
You scared me.
It's okay, Mommy.
He turns, walks across the bedroom floor, and leaves the room. Jesse watches him. She spots the note, picks it up, and reads it. Paul's four-wheel drive travels along a busy road in a commercial part of a city, with skyscrapers in the distance. Grim-faced, Paul parks the car outside a large glass-fronted building. Inside, he examines some papers. He approaches an elderly female clerk, who sits at a desk.
Sorry, there's nothing here. Are you sure this is the only St. Pius?
No, it's the only one in this city. Like I said, they've been closed for some time now.
What about past student records? Like a search by name. I'm looking for Zachary Clark.
Oh, by name could take a while.
I can wait.
A few weeks.
Paul drives along a residential street. He looks at a note in his hand. He rummages in the trunk and takes out a crowbar and a flashlight. He strides towards a building which has a no trespassing barrier across its stairs and a stone sign with St. Pius carved into it. He ducks under the barrier and climbs the stairs. Paul walks down the hall of the derelict school, broken glass and debris littering the floor. Dust motes dance around his head in a patch of blue light. He shines the flashlight on some framed photos hanging askew on the wall. At the end of the hall are double glass doors. He turns into a classroom. Desks and chairs are scattered around the room. Shining his flashlight on the badly charred walls, the light beam picks out drawings behind a glass case. He opens the case door and plucks the faded picture of a burning building from the display board. He turns over the paper, which is charred around the edges. It is signed Zachary, 16 Webster Street. Paul parks in a street of two-story houses. He presses the bell on a dark blue door.
Hi.
Yes?
Sorry to bother you. My name's Paul Duncan. I know this sounds crazy, but I'm here about Zachary Clark. Does that name mean anything to you? He's a young child, a boy.
No, I'm sorry.
What about the previous owners? Did they have any children?
Melinda!
Sorry.
The woman hands her baby to Melinda.
No, there were no previous owners. My husband and I bought this place about 6 years ago when it was just a burnt down shell, and he's an architect, so we restored it.
So it was just vacant?
Well, for a few years, yeah. But I don't know anything about its previous owners.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Sorry.
Sorry to bother you.
She closes the door. He climbs into his car, picks up a notebook, and writes. The woman appears at the driver's window. He winds the window down.
Sorry, the nanny. We interviewed quite a few nannies, mostly by phone, but I remember speaking to one who I could have sworn said she used to work for the family who used to live at this address. And I think that I saved her contact information.
Great. Thank you. Cora Williams? You don't know me, but I need to talk to you. It's about Zachary Clark.
Paul looks behind him. Cora, a middle-aged black woman, opens the door.
Come in.
Jessie strides into the kitchen laden with shopping bags. She places them on a table, removes her scarf, and walks into the dining room, which has large French windows. She takes off her coat, dumps it on the dining table, and turns around. Walking away from the windows, she crosses the floor to the answering machine.
You have no messages.
She throws the machine to the floor, turns around, and folds her arms. She bites her nails, watched by Adam from outside the window.
I'd hoped I'd never hear that name again.
What did he do?
There had been incidents at school. He never had any friends, used to come home with all sorts of scrapes. Once they locked him in an empty classroom, a teacher finally found him terrified and shaken. But that was before he started acting up. Pretty soon those kids got wise and just left him alone. Then there was the fire.
The fire at St. Pius?
They never found out how the fire got started. But I knew. And when Zachary came home, I asked him about it. He just gave me this smile.
Jessie moves nervously from the kitchen to the hall.
Adam?
I swear, when I looked into those eyes of his, I didn't see anything but evil behind them. I kept my distance, scared of what else he might be capable of. All these terrible thoughts running through my mind.
Jessie climbs the stairs and freezes on the first landing.
It was just the two of us at home that day. He was taking his bath when it suddenly became clear to me what I had to do. He never even heard me come in.
Cora remembers opening the bathroom door where Zachary sits in a bath behind a clear plastic shower curtain covered with condensation. Cora's shadowy figure slowly approaches the bath. She rips the curtain from the rail and covers Zachary's face with it.
I tried to go through with it. I swear I tried, but I just couldn't. When his mother came home, Zachary didn't say a word about what I'd done.
Jessie steps cautiously into the hall by the front door. She looks up.
Are you here?
I was at home the next day when I was struck by the most awful premonition. I hurried right over. Two blocks away, I could already hear the sirens. Then I saw all that smoke. I rushed into the house, blinded by all those flames, praying I wasn't too late.
But you were.
It turned out his mother was already dead by then.
Jessie creeps along the hall, fear etched in her face.
I remember it was freezing cold that day. It was always cold in that big house.
Adam?
So she went down the stairs to the basement to check on the water heater.
Are you down there?
And that's where he was, just waiting for her.
Jessie descends to the dark room.
So you're saying Zachary killed his mother?
He used a hammer he took down from the wall. And when he was done, he set a fire. Then he went upstairs and finished playing. That's where they found his body.
Where was his father?
Oh, He was at the hospital, like always.
Hospital, he was a doctor.
A baby doctor, yeah. Only, seemed more like a scientist to me.
The Duncan's house. Paul drives in the city, phone to his ear.
Jesse, pick it up if you're there, please. Listen, I gotta talk to you right away. It's important. Call me as soon as you get this. I love you.
Jesse opens the darkroom door and enters. A red light shines on Adam's hands as they touch photos of the original Adam in a tray of solution. The red box lies empty on the work surface. Jesse pads towards Adam, whose face is reflected in the developing solution.
Adam, you shouldn't have opened that. You shouldn't have touched that box.
Adam.
Is this me?
Jesse raises her fist to her mouth.
Honey, let me explain.
Adam keeps his back to her and stares at the photo.
Adam.
She rubs the back of her neck and breaks the bulb.
What?
I need to speak with Richard Wells.
I'm sorry, but Dr. Wells is at the Hazen funeral today.
A funeral where?
The blacked out dark room.
Honey, don't be scared. It's okay. I'm right here. Just be careful, okay?
Adam flits across the room. A metallic flash.
Honey.
Mommy?
Adam, where are you?
Adam opens the door and stands in a shaft of light.
Adam?
Adam can't come out to play right now, Mrs. Duncan.
Wait!
He runs up the stairs.
Wait!
Adam turns and stares at her.
Let me explain.
He turns and rushes away. Jesse charges up the stairs after him and crosses the dining room floor, pausing at the open French window. She watches Adam sprinting across the garden. Pallbearers carry Roy's coffin up the center aisle of a church. The minister holds Roy's mother's arm as they walk down the aisle. Wells stands in a line of mourners as Paul appears in the pew behind him.
Couldn't use him, could you? Zachary, you couldn't use him. Maybe it never even occurred to you to try.
Wells turns and looks at him.
No, it occurred to me.
But the fire destroyed him, right? He didn't even have a viable cell.
His genetics I could salvage, but it was no more than pieces of a map. I'd save what I could, but after that, I was this close to perfecting the procedure. You can't possibly fathom that kind of torture. To have this knowledge, this power, know there's nothing more you can do about it.
But you did do things about it, Richard. Once you had Adam's cell, you could preserve his physical characteristics and manipulate certain genes. Intangibles like cognition, personality, his memory. I'm right, aren't I?
Except for one thing. There was no way to predict the results. I could only wait and hope for a glimpse of him, the mere indication that something had lived on.
Lived on? Do you have any idea what you've done to my son? To my family?
I'd think you, of all people, would understand, seeing as we were both after the same thing. I just wanted him back.
You experimented with a human life.
So did you. So did your wife.
No, I would say there's a huge difference.
Is there, Paul? You think you can just open Pandora's box and then just close it again?
We trusted you, goddammit! We had no way of knowing. What you did goes way beyond.
Beyond what? Societal standards? You name me a single medical advancement that didn't. Tell me something. If I'm not supposed to do this, Paul, then how is it that I can?
Paul grabs him and sits him on a pew.
You're a scientist. Only this isn't about science. A revolution. It's about moral trespass. About your ignoring what's right and what's wrong.
And what about you, Paul? Have you trespassed?
Paul lets go.
I don't know. Maybe this is my punishment for wanting something that I never should have had. And if that's the case, then so be it. But believe me when I tell you, Richard, I'm going to do everything in my power to save my child and see that you pay for what you've done.
Paul.
No, this is over. You understand? I'm going to go to the police, and then we're going to find someplace, any place that can help him.
You're not going anywhere,
Paul. Like hell I'm not.
It was an experiment. That experiment failed. We can always terminate and try again.
Terminate?
He strides towards Wells.
It's my son you're talking about.
our son. He's yours because I gave him to you. You stay away from him. You hear me? You stay away.
Paul turns away. Wells grabs a large candlestick and hits the back of Paul's head. A candle sets fire to a Bible on the altar. Paul lies face down.
You were lucky to have him as long as you did. You had nothing when I found you. I gave you a child, a house, a job, anything in your life that you value, I provided. You remember that, you ungrateful piece of shit!
The back of Paul's head gushes with blood. Wells drops the candlestick on the floor and strides away from Paul, who lies prostrate in the center aisle. The altar is ablaze. Jessie paces along the road by the wood near the Duncan's house. She wraps her long cardigan around her, glances over her shoulder, and peers through the trees. Distraught, she steps off the road and walks toward the edge of the wood. Wells climbs into his car.
Why didn't he listen?
He bangs his hands on the steering wheel, the top half of his face in shadow. He pulls away from the church. Smoke billows from its bell tower. In the woods, Jessie leans against a tree.
Adam!
She doubles up as she calls, puts her arm to her forehead, straightens up, and stares into the distance. She walks through the trees towards the abandoned building.
Adam.
A hand lifts an axe, hanging on a loop chain.
You in here?
Cold gray light shines on Jessie as she stands framed in the doorway. She steps into the darkness of the building, moving past the pile of sacks. A shaft of light through a hole in the roof illuminates ropes on a table. Through a chicken wire partition, chains hang from the ceiling.
Adam, where are you?
She walks past the chicken wire partition, a hanging scythe and suspended ropes and chains. She glances at a table with various implements on it and walks backwards towards a farming tool with sharp metal prongs. She turns and, wide-eyed with terror, looks at the sharp spikes, moves to the side and paces towards the door. She places her hands on the door frame. She turns back into the building and creeps into the shadows. Adam perches in the rafters. He aims the axe at her head. Zachary hammers his mother's face. Adam brings the axe down. Paul grabs the axe.
Let go of the axe. Adam.
Adam blinks and looks at Paul, who takes the axe from him. Jessie stares at her son. Adam smiles.
Yes, Daddy.
Jessie and Paul glance at each other.
Who are you? Who are you right now?
I'm your son.
Paul stares at Adam as Jessie leans her head against a metal grill. Adam's face breaks into a beaming smile. Blackout. Wells walks across the floor of a dimly lit apartment, twirling the meditation balls in his hand. White letters, 6 months later. He switches on a table lamp, puts on his glasses and reads a newspaper headline. Still no new information in disappearance of local physician. Next to this lies a paper on a clipboard entitled Journal of Medicine. Another newspaper headline reads, Rural Doctor Still Missing. With the meditation balls whirling in his hand, He scans down an obituary column with a pen. Underneath a blue sky, large detached houses line the road of an estate. Children play on the road, and a jogger runs by them. Trees in full foliage grow on the side of the road. The movers lift a big cardboard box from a van and walk across the yard, which is littered with more boxes. One of them strides toward a cream-colored house as Paul and a painter descend its front steps. Another has a pile of boxes on the sidewalk. From the second floor window, Adam stares at a group of children playing next door with a large yellow ball. Paul climbs the stairs carrying a lampstand and looks at Adam. Jesse bounds in with a box.
Hey, like in a room.
Adam shrugs his shoulders. Jesse glances at Paul.
It's not finished yet.
Adam stares out the window. Jesse looks over her shoulder at Paul.
Hey, kiddo, look. It's a big change, we know. Those doctors you've been working with, they all say this change could be really good for you, right?
Adam turns away from the window and leans against a wall with patches of plaster on it. He stares sullenly at Paul.
Sweetie, you've been doing so great. And I bet in a new town, new friends, you're gonna do even better.
I know.
Mrs. Duncan?
Coming!
Hey! I got three boxes downstairs, and they're all labeled toys. How about you give me a hand unpacking them? Yeah?
Where would you like these?
Oh, careful with that. It's going downstairs.
Paul trots out the door, and Adam paces across the floor and stops at the doorway. He turns and looks at the window, then at the white double doors of a closet. Adam moves back into the room and walks cautiously across the floor. He looks over his shoulder, then steps around some large boxes. He grasps the golden handles of the closet doors, turns them, opens the doors, and stares inside. A piece of polythene hangs on a rail. He turns around. A gory hand covers Adam's mouth and drags him back inside.
Hey, kiddo, I thought you're...
Paul stops and scratches his head.
Adam.
He walks over to the window, looks out, and taps on the window frame. He spots the closet doors slightly ajar, crosses the floor, and pulls the door wide open. The closet is empty. He closes the doors. Adam grabs the back of Paul's shirt. Paul spins around, startled.
I thought you were coming down. Are you all right?
Adam stares at him impassively.
You tell me if there was anything...
Nothing's wrong, Daddy. I'm fine.
Right.
Paul lowers his eyes in relief and puts his arm on Adam's shoulders.
Trust me. This is going to be great for us.
They stand in the doorway.
It's a place we can start all over.
Paul smiles and holds Adam's face in his hands. Adam nods his head slightly and smiles. Paul places a hand on the small of Adam's back. They walk out of the room and descend the stairs. Outside the new house, movers push a large crate towards the house as another walks down the front path. This audio description was commissioned by Pathé Pictures and kindly sponsored by Highland Spring Natural Mineral Waters, Scotland. The audio description script was written by Patrick O'Kane, narrated by Lynn Baines, and produced by Carol McGregor of IADA Limited, recorded at STV Studios, Glasgow, in May 2004. Cast: Paul Duncan, Greg Kinnear, Jesse Duncan, Rebecca Roman Stamos, Richard Wells, Robert De Niro, Adam Duncan, Cameron Bright, Roy Hazen, Jordan Schurer, Dr. Lieber, Chris Britton, Cora Williams, Janet Bailey, Zachary Clark Wells, Devin Bostick. Casting, Sarah Halley Finn, CSA, Randy Hiller, CSA. Costume designer, Suzanne McCabe. Production designer, Doug Craner. Music composed by Brian Tyler. Edited by Stephen Merkovich, ACE, and Niven Howey. Director of Photography, Kramer Morgenthau. Co-producers, Steve Mitchell, Mark Bombach. Executive producers, Todd Wagner, Mark Cuban, John Faltheimer, Mark Canton, Michael Pasternak, Michael Burns, Eric Kopoloff. Produced by Mark Butan, Kathy Schulman, Sean O'Keefe. Written by Mark Bombeck. Directed by Nick Hamm.